Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Hi, Ed Marks here. Welcome to our podcast, Digital Voices. So happy to have you. As you know, in Digital Voices, we try to cover the entire spectrum of healthcare to include providers and payers and pharma, the whole life sciences, big tech, and most importantly, patients. Thank you for joining us again, and really excited about our guest today. So we are going to really flip the chairs on our guest, John Lin, and he's the one who's usually behind the mic talking and interviewing people and really sharing a lot of great information with all of us out there. But we're going to flip it today and learn from him, because you can imagine the wealth of knowledge that he has gained by being on that other side of the chair or other side of the microphone. So when I think about the work, the service that John has done, I think about my early foray into blogging and sharing information, social media. And for me, it really started back when I first became a CIO at University Hospitals in Cleveland, Ohio, around 2003, 2004. And there was a general lack of communication. The morale, the culture was really bad in IT. And I was a pretty young person, not having been trained in a classical way to be in the role of CIO. So I was trying everything I could to really connect with the team and really try to gain their confidence. And one thing that maybe helped me the most was blogging every day. So it wasn't like 1,000 words, but it was probably about 250, 300 words a day. And I would just share with them, hey, what am I doing? What am I up to? What's the goals of IT as we were morphing and developing a plan? Just really engaging them. And I did all the other things too, walking around and having lunch, breakfast sessions with anyone who wanted to. But I think what was the most powerful, because it reached everyone, was really the social aspects. So the blogging and then video communication. So it was really a combination of all these things. And I really saw the power of it. And then as I was trying to learn and develop myself, I found these amazing resources out there. And I'm sure you all know John Lin already, and he is one of those amazing resources. And so that's why, again, I'm so excited to have him as a guest. He is, I'll let him introduce himself largely, but what I did find quite interesting, he's founder of healthcarescene.com and Expo Health, has dozens of websites that provide a variety of information, but has been the either the author or co-author, somehow connected to 16,000 articles out there, and amazing presence in the Twitter world and podcasting. And like I shared with John, I will go running frequently. And whenever I run, I'm always listening to a podcast. And many times it's John himself. And so we didn't really connect, John, until less than a year ago, I want to say. So we've all been out there in the healthcare universe, but for whatever reason, we just never connected other than, you know, knowing who we were and what our roles were and things like that. So anyways, happy to have you. And the first question we always ask, John, is your musical taste. So like, what is your go-to band? Do you have a favorite band, favorite song? What do you like to listen to?
Yeah, you know, I have eclectic taste, so I like a mix of music. It kind of depends on the mood and the moment, but I like something that's a little romantic. I'm a romantic at heart, but, you know, my first real love affair with music was watching CMT All About Faith Weekend, which was an All About Faith Hill weekend. And so that was probably my first real love of music, was Faith Hill and, you know, a wide variety. Breathe, This Kiss, anything she sang with her husband. Like, you know, it's just, she just is an amazing talent. So maybe I'll put her at the top of the list.
All right. So kind of a country, open to all types of music, but I definitely see a country, a little bit of a country bent, but
yeah,
romantic.
A little bit
music.
Of country, a little bit of pop, yeah. A little bit of rock and roll. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So tell us your story, John. both personal and professionally? Like, I'm really curious, you know, how you got into doing what you do, and you've been doing it for a long, long time. So I know our listeners want to know more. Tell us, give us the inside scoop, John.
Well, what's fascinating is I was actually talking with a CIO recently, and I shared with them that when I first started in IT, I really wanted to be a CIO. I was like, I want to be the boss. I want to, you know, I had this aspiration within me. I got to be the CIO. And when I got to my first job, I kind of saw what the CIO did and the other leaders. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be a CIO. Like, I had the ambition. I mean, I was thinking this through, like, as I prepared for this, and I was like, I was working at Wendy's in high school, and I remember working the grill with this other lady who was making the hamburgers, and I told her, I'm going to be a millionaire by some age. I can't even remember what age, right? And she looked at me and she said, John, I think you will. And it was like, it kind of blew my mind. She's like, you're the only one that works here at Wendy's that will, but you will. I have confidence in you. It was really interesting. So I had this ambition and drive to be successful, to provide value and meaning, and, you know, and to do something with my life. But I realized, oh, I don't want to be a CIO because I don't want to manage people. I love technology because technology can transform a workflow. It can transform an organization. And that's what I loved. And so to me, that's kind of where I started, was like, okay, I have ambition, but I don't want to be a CIO. So where does that leave me? And, you know, I got a job at UNLV in their health and counseling center. And then my job was to roll out an EHR for their health and counseling center, but it was for students. So not a university medical center, more ambulatory focused. And so I took the job 6 months in, you know, I was bored on a weekend. And what do tech people do when they're bored on a weekend? I started a blog about EMR, but I was really just trying to learn search engine optimization. I was sharing some knowledge, figured one day it would help me get a job. And, you know, little by little, I grew it to about 1,000 page views a day. And I thought to myself, who reads this? Like, if I'm a doctor, I don't go home and read about EHR. And this was 15 years ago, right? So early days, it wasn't even EHR yet. It was EMR, right? And so anyway, I started, and I reached 1,000 page views a day, first page of Google for EMR. And then I was like, okay, let's try some other stuff. Well, you know, long story short, Obama gave $36 billion of stimulus money for EHR, and I had two sites by this point, and they just blew up. And 11 years ago, I quit the day job and full-time blogger media organization ever since.
No, that's pretty fascinating, that whole journey. So this is Digital Voices. So curious, how do you leverage digital in your practice, like in the business side of what you do? Obviously, you report on all things digital, but how do you embrace digital yourself?
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways to kind of look at this, but I think the top way for us is probably through social media. We have such a strong presence on social media. I have 100,000 followers across 6 different accounts, which admittedly is probably too many accounts. But, you know, when you're learning social media at the beginning, you're throwing stuff on the wall and seeing what works. And for us, that's really, I think, the key element. And I think related to that is the idea of community. And for us, community is key to everything. And we don't look at it as, hey, I have a blog, or I have a Twitter chat, or I have a conference. Like, we don't think about it that way. We think about it as we have a health IT community and we have a healthcare marketing community. And the health IT community has the Healthcare IT Today publication, the HITSM Twitter chat, those types of things. And then our HITMIC community has HITMIC.com, has a HITMIC Twitter chat, has all of those things, conferences associated with each one. And so we look at that way. And that's what I love about technology. And I mean, I just told you some of my story. I was a nobody working at UNLV in a small student clinic. Like, why should I have had any influence over the EHR industry? I shouldn't have, right? It doesn't make sense in any area of the world. And yet that's what technology allows. And in many ways, that's how I look at our communities. We have a way to bring people together that wouldn't be able to come together otherwise. So that's what I love about technology.
Yeah, speaking of social media, so let me throw this at you, John. Clubhouse, early now with Clubhouse. What are your What are your initial thoughts? And do you think it's a place, how do you think healthcare should interact? And if you're a CDO, Chief Digital Officer, should you be checking it out? How do you react to Clubhouse?
Yeah, Clubhouse is pretty interesting. And you know, you have to be careful because there is an early period where you can discover a lot of things that you can't do later. Like at the beginning of Twitter, everyone was following everyone. And so it was beautiful. It was this land of discovery and connection and meeting new people. And I think we'll see that in Clubhouse as well. I mean, we're seeing it already. But I think the challenge is we saw that potential in, you know, Google Plus, right? We saw it in Snapchat. We've seen it in Instagram. We see it across all these platforms. The question is, will it really take off? And I'm a little skeptical on Clubhouse myself because the problem with Clubhouse is it consumes so much time. And one thing we found, like the Twitter chats on Health IT, they were doing amazing in the beginning because everyone was discovering it. And so they could justify, yeah, that makes sense for me to take part. But once we know each other, like how do you tell your boss, hey, I'm going to go hop on Clubhouse for a few hours, right? Like at least a tweet, you're like, oh, I'm going to spend 5 minutes before the meeting scrolling my feed. Like that was reasonable. So I think that's the problem with Clubhouse. It's extremely time consuming. So, I mean, if you want to make it your fun activity at night, I guess, you know, it makes sense. One caveat, though, is that there are a lot of investors and startup entrepreneur people there. And so there may be an opportunity there to discover them. But just know it's a big time commitment. And I don't think there's going to be many CIOs and, you know, that are going there. And most of the people doing the work on the ground, they're just not going to have time.
Yeah, I've been fascinated. I've been early in Clubhouse and checking it out. But yeah, I can see the points that you're making. But I just feel like if you're a chief digital officer, if you're a CIO, if you're a leader in tech, you always have to, as you mentioned, or the phrase you used earlier, John, was throw things up against the wall. You need to test them out, see what's going on, see what the buzz is all about. Because sometimes that's the process in which you learn something else. So it may not be the end all, may not be Clubhouse, but it might lead to some other innovation or some other idea that you might be able to apply within your organization or your patient community. So, John, I want to tap into a lot of your knowledge now. Like I said in the introduction, where we're sort of flipping the microphone, flipping the chair on you a little bit, you have the opportunity to talk to many, many leaders. Like you said, this is your full-time job. You get to do a lot of research. You get to interact with people on multiple forums. So you have a really amazing view into what's going on in healthcare and digital transformation. So I want to ask you a little bit about that. So do you see any untapped frontiers? Like, do you see things on the horizon that our listeners, again, sort of chief digital officers across the entire health ecosystem, what should we be thinking about looking at, you know, there on the horizon?
Yeah, I think for most healthcare organizations, there's a lot of untapped frontiers. And I think there's two reasons that this happened. One is that if you look at it, many healthcare organizations didn't have to innovate. They didn't have to do something. Their business was fine without having to innovate. Many of them had monopolies. Or, you know, if you have a 2-month waiting list to see a patient, you don't have to innovate, right? You know, like you're in such demand that you weren't forced to. So I think that's like the biggest thing. And then the second was many of them just didn't care. Right? And I'm sad to say that, right? Like they cared about the patients, but they didn't understand the transformative effect that technology could have on the experience for the patients. They kind of took it for granted, I think, a little bit. Some were just ignorant to it, just didn't take the time. So there's this mix of things going on. So if I look at what are those areas that really could grow an organization and could improve an organization and really transform the experience for the patient, the biggest for me is the way that you communicate with the patient. it's amazing how many during COVID realized, oh, I don't have a way to communicate with our patients. Sure, they all have a Facebook page and they all have a website, right? You know what I mean? But I'm talking about connecting one-to-one with the patient. And when I look forward into the future, I look at value-based care and I say the core to value-based care is having a deep connection and relationship to the patient. And at the core of that is communicating with them effectively, having a two-way channel of communication with them that's customized to their unique needs. You know, I was talking with a friend here. I live in Las Vegas, as you know. And in the casino industry, they're like, we don't wait for the patient to come to us, right? For the person to come into the casino. He said, no, I'm going to come after you, right? Like, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to influence your behavior. And to be honest, healthcare organizations didn't have to do that for the longest time. But as we shift to value-based care, they're going to have to. So I think that's one frontier that's really interesting and exciting for me to look at. The other one I'm really excited about, and I'm hoping it lives up to its potential, and that's ambient clinical voice or ambient clinical intelligence. Basically, how do we automate the minutiae that doctors hate doing? You know, they hate the EHR, not because they hate the EHR in my mind, in most cases. They hate it because of all the documentation burden that's represented by the EHR. And so if ambient clinical voice can solve that and automate the process of documentation while still satisfying the reimbursement and regulatory needs, to me, that is a beautiful frontier that we all need to embrace.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I have very, very high hopes for ambient voice as well. I think there's a good start. You know, it's been around. If you think about Kurzweil, was that the name of the software? It was the name of the person and the software. But we deployed that, man, that was like mid-1990s. Things have come quite a long ways, obviously, with technology and processes and things of that nature. So I do have really high hopes. So, John, along these same lines, what should a leader do to remain relevant? So we talked about these untapped frontiers. So you need to know what the untapped frontiers are. You need to be talking to people, listening to people like John Lynn. But what else? What else should a leader do to remain relevant? Because I'm afraid that after we graduate, that sometimes is the last of our at least formal education, and oftentimes even the informal. So what would be some recommendations you would give?
Yeah, when I talk to a lot of CIOs, I think they're so overwhelmed with the operational minutiae of their jobs, whether it's the number of meetings they have or whether it's the fire, put out this fire, next fire, next fire. So, I mean, that's, I think, the first step for any healthcare leader is to look at their schedule. And many cases, you need to schedule in time to think about the future, right? Now, whether that's educating yourself, reading articles or listening to podcasts or connecting with peers or different peer groups, or whether it's hopping on Twitter and seeing what's happening there, or whether it's just spending time with nothing on the agenda. There's so many healthcare leaders that are so agenda driven that they don't have any free time to really think about what are we spending our time on? What are our priorities? And where should we put our priorities rather than just fighting fire, meeting, schedule, I have to do this review, right? So I think that's the key. And then with that free time, using it effectively. And in some cases, that might be reaching out to other leaders that are going to force you to think about it in a different way. In other cases, it may be just thinking through your own processes, understanding what your board's strategic strategies are. And then once you understand that, those interactions on a blog or on Twitter or listening to a podcast become so much more meaningful because you've internalized the strategies of your organization. And then you can take the insights that you read about or you hear and incorporate them and layer them on top of the strategies for your organization.
Yeah, those are really good points. I know that in my calendar, I would scratch out twice a week, like a 3-4 hour block. And it was really meant to do what you're talking about. Think, get away. You know, this was before a lot of work from home when I started this process. And so I would just get away to a nearby coffee shop and that way I was away from all the distractions and could really focus. And I do believe that those sort of time investments pay off. It doesn't seem like it at the time for obvious reasons, because you're not being quote unquote productive, but it's key to remaining relevant. What about outside industry? You know, we've chatted about this online quite a bit on Twitter, and some people take a little bit of offense. What do you mean, outside industry? We're fine inside on our own. Any thoughts around that?
Well, it's interesting. You said, where can they find, you know, these new frontiers? And, you know, I argued that there's a lot of them out there. And the reason we know there's a lot of them out there is because so many other industries have already done this. You know, we're not in reinventing the wheel. We're not creating new technology in many cases. We're taking technology or solutions that have worked in other industries and applying it to healthcare. A great example of this is this inflow of requests we've gotten around COVID, right? Like, we've just gotten slammed with requests from patients, maybe not even our patients. It may be just people in the community that says, oh, you're the health system. Hopefully you'll have answers for me, right? So we've been slammed with that. We're not the first industry to get slammed with customer service requests, right? A lot of other industries have dealt with this. And how do we automate those requests so that they can get an answer without even talking to someone? That's a great, you know, other industry has already solved this. Let's learn from them and apply that to our organization. But then also, you know, how do we scale the need, right? Like, how do you approach it from a staffing standpoint? There's just a wide variety of things you can learn from another industry that, you know, other industries would look at and be like, that's not groundbreaking. Like, doing that, we've been doing that for 15 years. And you're like, well, guess what? In healthcare, that is groundbreaking because we aren't doing it. So I think that's where it's exciting. The key question, though, is finding a way to translate it can be harder than many want to really recognize. You know, it's one thing to talk about how a casino treats their customers and creates loyalty with their customers. Some people aren't great at drawing the lines between, oh, you said thank you to the person at the, you know, when you gave them their drink at the table and you changed their experience just by saying thank you. How do I apply that to healthcare, right? Not everyone's great at doing that and saying, hey, well, maybe your front desk, when you're leaving, just says, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you and sorry you had to wait. And now that waiting experience that was awful for the patient, they had to wait an hour. Now they say, oh, you know, it wasn't so bad. You know, they were very kind. And, you know, so it's, we can take those principles from the other industry and do it, but not everyone's great at drawing the lines.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of shocked, actually, but then not shocked that some people don't think there's value in doing that. So it's refreshing to hear your perspective. And I do agree with you as well that while the concepts are transferable, sometimes putting them into practice, you know, takes a little bit of thought. So, John, I know that you said early on in your career, you knew that you did not want to be a CIO. And that's great to have that clarity, because, you know, a lot of people in our age group still don't know what they want to do. So it's good that you know what you don't want to do also. But let's just say that suddenly you were hired as a CIO. And I know this is a tough question because it all depends on the organization you're going to. But if we were to just say you ended up at the average health system, you know, in an average United States, North American city, what do you think might be two or three things that you would do based on what you've learned, you know, for the last 15 years and all the different leaders that you've spoken to?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Hamilton, they say, speak less, smile more, right? Like, you know, we have two ears, one mouth, right? You know, I think that's where I'd start, right? And to me, it's going around doing the listening to the organization. And I think listening means a lot of things to a lot of different people. It's one thing to hear what you said, and it's another thing to understand what you mean. And I think there's a lot of people who don't get down to that meaning. And it's hard, right? I mean, sometimes I'm not great at it either. But, you know, I think that would be the first step is go around and listen. listen to the organization, you know, understand what the successes are and also the challenges, and no doubt pull both of them and understand what drives that person or that team. I think that would be the first step. I think the second step would be, you know, as I kind of mentioned before, what are the priorities of the organization and aligning the priorities of the organization to the projects that you're working on, and use that as a framework for decision-making. I just remember one time one of my CMIO friends was going live with Epic, and he's like, we have 5,000 tickets after our Epic go live. He's like, how am I supposed to prioritize those, John? He said, and some of those tickets are, you know, 30-minute fixes, and some of them are 5-month projects. Like, how do I even approach this? And so I argue, go back to the strategy, understand the strategy, and then align, you know, those decisions with the strategy. And then I think the third one, you know, to what we've talked about before, was don't be afraid to bring in outside perspectives to help you understand and see blind spots that you may not see. You know, I think that's valuable, whether it's people who've worked there in the past, whether it's your mentors, you know, whoever it might be that can, you know, kind of gut check you and say, are you, you know, is that really what you're seeing, or are you just reacting in the moment? And so I think that's valuable as well, to have this network of peers and mentors to understand, you know, and really keep you honest in your evaluations.
Yeah, those are really good things for anyone being new, or even if you've been there a while. Sometimes you have to kind of press reset. So those three things that you just shared, John, those are applicable for any of us, whether you've been in the organization for 5 years or 5 days. And I want to just add one last thing on the listening tour, because that's a pretty known thing that you should do, which isn't done very often. But if you do, here's what I recommend. Do it every year and go back to the same people. And so that, yeah, so that's what I would do. So I would do it up to 3 years. So just make sure, though, that you followed up on the first year. So I had a notebook, and, you know, I took detailed notes, and then I would make sure we execute on those things that were strategically aligned. And then I'd come back the second year. So that's what I called them, like the second. I'd make it like a rock tour type thing, like the second anniversary tour or whatever, a listening tour. And then I'd say, hey, John, you know, last March we talked about these five things and we did these three. So what's next? You know, we couldn't do these two for whatever reason, but what's next? And you just build this level of trust and confidence, and helps build credibility that then helps you in different areas. Look, John, this has been amazing. I knew it would be. If I took a bunch of notes, if I just summarized a few that we can learn from someone who's been in the industry a long time, listening to leaders, it was really about trying new things and experimenting and innovating. Do not be afraid to throw things up against the wall, see where they land. You've got to carve out time to do this. So don't get stuck in the day-to-day operations. It's important, obviously, but if you don't take some time away, then you will always be stuck in operations. And then look for external perspectives. So don't always be insular. And you can learn so much from other industries that have done things before. We may have to tweak them a little bit for healthcare, but we can certainly learn a lot. So there was much, much more than that. Those were just sort of like my top three takeaways. And I appreciate you being on the show, John, and everything that you do for healthcare across the continuum. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate being here.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Marks. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.